Welcome to Frame of Reference, informed, intelligent conversations about the issues and challenges facing everyone in today's world. In-depth interviews with Sauk County's leaders and professionals to help you expand and inform your frame of reference. Brought to you by the Max FM Digital Network. Now here's your host, Raoul Labrèche.
Well, welcome to another edition of Frame of Reference, Sauk County and Beyond. And we are beyonding again today. My guest today is a guy that I've known for, five years. And he's actually the big kahuna here at WRPQ's digital network, Max FM, which we try to call out to every time we do this podcast, because it was his impetus, his driving me to, you know what you really should do is a podcast that made yours truly want to do this thing in the first place. But I'm talking about none other than Corey Hartman, who is the, you are the owner, the president, the janitor.
All of that. Yes.
And more.
All of that.
So, and Corey, how did you come to do this? I mean, you've told me this story before, but just so people know, how did this happen?
That's a really good question. I stumbled into my local small town hometown radio station in Iron River, Michigan, and I basically didn't leave until they gave me a job.
Ah,
yeah,
you were that persistent.
I was.
Or obnoxious.
Well,
I was
obnoxious. I mean, there's a
how old were you at this point?
Oh man, I mean, there's a slightly longer version of this.
Okay.
That the general manager of the station,
okay,
his daughter was my fifth grade teacher.
Oh my!
And she knew that I wanted to do radio, broadcasting, whatever.
Okay.
And so my grades were not the greatest. And so she said
what?
That
you
right?
weren't a scholar?
Surprising, I know.
I thought you had to be a scholar to own a radio station.
Right. Okay. And I mean, I knew I was going to be a radio DJ from the time I was like 4 years old, but okay, my grades weren't the greatest. And so she said, you know, if you get your grades up,
okay,
I will take you for a tour at the radio station.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, I've got to do this,
yeah,
right? So,
yeah,
you know, so I raised from, you know, a C to a B or whatever it was.
Okay.
And we got a tour, got to meet the owner there.
Okay.
And he went over to the teletype wire, you know, the old paper printing out back in the day.
Right next to his mimeograph machine. Right
next to the mimeograph was the teletype machine. He rips me off like this big long sheet of all the news and weather and sports and everything that had been printing out of there for the last like hour. And he said, if you want to be in radio, take this home and read this. And I said, read it. Yeah. Out loud over and over and over again to yourself.
Sure.
And pretend that you're on the radio.
Sure.
And I said,
you got
salute.
It.
Yes, sir. I will do that.
I'm on that. I'm so on that.
I am on that. I am all over that.
Yeah,
I took that teletype piece of paper home, and I would announce it. I would announce it over
sure.
and over and over again
sure.
and just read. And, you know, and then I'd spin records in my basement, and I had bought a little mixer at one time, you know, a little Radio Shack, you know, $5 mixer. And eventually I got sick of reading, you know, a year old news.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back to the radio station and I just knocked on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever the DJ was says, yeah, come on in. What's going on? You know, I said, I want to dig through your garbage can. and he's a what?
I'm a dumpster diver.
Yeah, I'm a dumpster diver.
Work your neighborhood radio.
Yeah, teletype paper diver.
There you go.
And so he let me grab a whole bunch of new copy, and then eventually that became a routine.
Okay.
I would come in once or twice a week and get new copy, take it home, and I was doing radio in my basement
sure.
for almost 2 years before finally one day that guy saw me in a supermarket and said, "So you gonna come work at the radio station or what?" You know, we got a guy going off to college and we've got Brewers baseball games that need to be board opt. And
sure.
And that's how I started. I started by running the control board and doing commercials for the Brewers.
And this is Iron River.
Iron River,
okay,
UP.
Which is just over the border,
yep,
isn't it?
Just over the border.
So
North Eagle River and all.
Kind of, yeah, and like Crystal Falls
uh-huh.
and all that. So, yeah,
yep.
I have a brother-in-law that has a place up in Crystal Falls. So
yep.
go through Iron River. And I always confuse that with Iron Mountain, which is actually much further up the pike, isn't it? not?
Well, that's, yeah, that's closer down toward like Menominee Marinette. Okay. And then you have Ironwood, which is all the way over by Duluth.
Ooh.
You know, and Ashland and all that stuff up
there.
So
there was a lot of iron.
And I've worked in all three. I've worked in all three irons. So, and Crystal Falls.
Your iron has been to many fires.
That's true. Yes, yes, it has. Which is how it works in broadcasting.
So here we go. You're in a small town, small market, all that good stuff. But you had quite an interesting career from that point. In fact, still do with your weather work that you still do, right?
You know, I've always been interested in severe weather, tornadoes specifically.
Okay.
And I got a little bit of that influence because I'd spend summers on my mom's farm in South Dakota.
Okay.
You know, not a lot of tornadoes in, you know, the UP,
right.
Although we did get a couple. But all summer long in South Dakota, you know, it's country music and tornado warnings. That's what's on the radio there.
Sure.
And so, you know, I thought that a tornado watch meant a tornado is coming to get me at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know,
knock, knock, knock. Yep. Hey, I'm your tornado.
Hello. I'm here and you're going to die.
Prepare to be blown away.
Exactly. So, and
wouldn't that be nice?
And so anytime there was any sort of, you know, weather watch, I would hang out in the I would sleep in the basement of my mom's house because I was just freaked out.
Sure.
And they say anything that you want to get over, any phobia that you want to get over, you jump into it, right? Like,
go towards it, don't go away.
Yeah, if you're afraid of a plane crashing, you go learn how to fly a plane or jump out of a plane or whatever you do.
Yeah.
So I said, I've got to learn more about the severe weather thing. And then one of those great PBS weather specials came on.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all about storm chasers and what they do and the science behind it. And, you know, not just the thrill-seeking part, which, you know, tornadoes are very exciting, but they also kill people. And so it's a lot about the science and the warning process. And then in this particular documentary, there was a clip from a radio station in Wichita, Kansas. And in Wichita, Kansas, this radio station, KFDI, employed storm chasers to go out and broadcast what was happening in and around the Wichita metro area. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I'm like, oh my God, I can bridge weather and broadcasting together.
Right.
I said, I've got to figure out how to do that. So
there's a huge market there. I mean, Kansas, we're talking Tornado Alley, right?
Right. Exactly. So. And so, you know, I didn't have the experience to just drive to Wichita and start, you know, chasing tornadoes around.
Sure.
So it took a few years.
I can't imagine there's a lot of people that want to do that job, though, either, was it, you know, or are
surprisingly,
there?
there's you know, there's probably a good contingent of people that do want to.
So they open a job opening and there will be more than one applicant.
There is. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's not a full-time job because tornadoes don't, thankfully, don't happen every day.
In the off-season, you watch whirlpools, right?
Yeah. So. Well, I've since learned there is no off-season either. So I used to think there was, but
lately.
But when you cover things nationwide, like I do now, which we'll get to in a sec, you know, there is no off season, but I didn't just like pack up my car and drive to Wichita. I started working at other small town radio stations. I went to broadcasting school, Minneapolis, Brown Institute. And then, you know, when you're a young broadcaster, you just jump all over the place.
Sure.
In fact, I was just on Facebook a little bit ago and I was looking at a guy that was very, very popular from like the mid 70s to the mid 90s and his entire resume. And he had call letters on there from three different stations in the same year. You know, and so I thought staying, you know, like a year and a half at each place was bad, you know, because, you know, dad's like, oh, you got to get the pension and the gold watch and all that. Yeah. And here I am jumping station to station, you know, up and down the dial, as the song goes.
Yeah.
A lot of it was in the Dakotas in Minnesota. And so there was a lot of weather to cover, you know, there. So, you know, we had a pretty big tornado in South Dakota in 1998, the Spencer, South Dakota tornado. It was an F4, killed like 8 or 9 people. I was on the air that night and my radio station covered the Spencer area.
Really?
Obviously other stations covered the area, but I was on the air and I knew that we had people listening in that county. And 8 people died. And it felt like they died on my watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there's got to be a better way to convey the danger and what's actually happening out there, because the Weather Service had come out after the fact and said, you know, there weren't a lot of spotters around. There weren't a lot of There were like some mobile Doppler crews that were around scanning the tornado, but they didn't really call in the fact that we had this massive tornado ripping through eastern South Dakota. And so they weren't getting a stream of information. And I said, it's got to be a better way to do that, you know? And we were already streaming audio. We were doing a lot of stuff with radio streaming and stuff in 1998, 99, 2000
with pretty progressive actually for that time.
It was bleeding edge technology. If you remember Real Media, Real Player, that's what we were using. I had a server that I had bartered out for the connection at a library in the UP, and I'm broadcasting radio from South Dakota through that server to whoever wanted to listen. And so we've been doing a lot of audio streaming, and I said, you know, this server can do video. There's a video part to this, and it can stream, and it's, you know, it's postage stamp size back in the day, but it's live video, you know, 5 frames a second, very, very poor. Poor quality, but it's live video. And I said, what if we can use that server and somehow broadcast from the field, from our car out chasing tornadoes or whatever, and broadcast that through the server and let the National Weather Service see exactly what we're seeing. Then I don't have to call in
real time.
It's real time. They can see, is there a tornado? Is there not a tornado? Is there big hail falling? You know, whatever. The only time they have to call me is, you know, what direction is your camera pointing? So we kind of know, and where and where are you?
Well, and they can tell from clouds what kinds of activity is going on, right? So if you're getting daytime or at least enough light, that you can show.
And
so
you can tell, is there a wall cloud? Is it rotating? Is there a funnel coming down? Whatever the case is. And so the Weather Service offices were able to see that in real time. And again, I'm still bridging broadcasting with weather, you know, so very, very interesting to me. And eventually, you know, we started a website. We had to wait for technology to catch up with us. We had this idea again in like late 90s, early 2000s, and we had to wait till 2003 or 4 for the cellular networks to catch up, where there was enough data that we could broadcast video over, you know, over cellular internet.
The 3G network.
It wasn't even 3G. It was like 1X or whatever was before 3G.
And you could still do that?
You could with Real Player, because it was very, very small and able to be broadcast.
Which allows it to be postage stamp size.
Exactly. This was not HD. There wasn't even HD when we started. HD wasn't even a thing.
Had your magnifying glass to just go, that's a person.
Yeah, it was barely SD. So we started this off, and we started, you know, like I said, we waited till about 2003 or 4, and then we started doing some tests. We would, you know, those big Logitech eyeball webcams that used to be on the top of your monitor?
I had one of those.
Everybody did. That's why I found one. I dumpster dove for that, too, I duct taped it to the dashboard, you know, facing out the front window.
Sure.
Plugged it into my laptop, downloaded the software that I needed, and up comes a picture of the road, except it was all washed out. It was all bright. It was a bright, sunshiny day.
Yeah.
And those cameras were not great. They were not meant for outdoor usage.
Right.
So I had to take my sunglasses off and put them in front of the eyeball camera so that
and you called him Herman.
And, yes, right? Or Hal or something. And and that darkened the picture enough that you could actually see it and transmit it. And I had a friend at the local TV station in Sioux Falls punch it up.
Okay.
And he goes, "Oh my God, we've got live video from your location." And I said, "Yes, we do." And then the next year we got our first live tornado on the air, and it was the first time that a tornado had ever been streamed live from the field to TV station in South Dakota. They've been doing it in Oklahoma City for a couple years because that's like the mecca.
Right.
But we were doing it with a $10 webcam and a free server at a library in Iron Mountain.
I have this idea of a webcam, one of those old, with a, like a nose being built for it and the sunglasses sitting on
Mr. Potato Head or something. Whatever. But, you know, it was only, you know, one lens worth. But
And Mrs. Potato Head to the side going, "Herman, it's over that way." So, yeah, the whole thing.
Run. So we did that for a few years, and you know, extremely long story short, you know, TV stations around the country, as we started chasing more, you know, we branched out from South Dakota, and, you know, as you get better and better at storm chasing and forecasting, sure, then you'll go to Minnesota, you'll go to, Des Moines, you'll go to Omaha, Lincoln, Nebraska area, sure. And those stations started taking notice that we had a website and were streaming, and they said, you know, we'll pay for your live stream. We'll give you some costs and stuff. Right. You know, first year we did it, I think I got a coffee mug and a videotape of the severe weather special. But the second year,
and we're probably happy about that too. Weren't you?
I was ecstatic. I'm like, I love the severe weather special. And I love the coffee mug from Kello TV.
And now we're so jaded. It's right? Like, I don't even get out of bed for a coffee mug.
Yeah,
so.
Forget that. You know, but they started paying, you know, a couple hundred dollars per day for the access to the video feed. Okay. And I said, this is a business now, you know, this is actually something that we could branch out to. And, you know, we started off with a service where I think like 25 or 50 people could watch at the same time, concurrently. And we would keep hitting that cap because people would tune in. It's not like today where everybody can stream live.
Right.
I mean, this was before YouTube.
Right.
This was before Ustream.
Right.
This was before any live thing. And we were doing live video streaming of tornadoes, you know, so very exciting for people. So, you know, call it, crack content. Like they couldn't get enough. Right.
Look at him do this one.
Yeah. Look at this guy's chasing.
That dog got blown away.
That's right. Look at that roof got blown away, you know? But it was also being used again at the weather service and for people to go, hey, that was my water tower, you know, in my town, and I live a mile east of town, and I better take shelter because I'm actually seeing this huge tornado coming into my town.
Right.
And that's what it helps the warning process. But it was also, like I said, turning into like a cottage, you know, industry.
Right.
And so we would hit that 50 cap, and we'd swipe my buddy's credit card again, and we'd get like a cap of 150, and two more storm chases, we'd bump up against that. And then, you know, a couple chases later, we'd swipe it again. And eventually we got to the point where it was costing us like $300 a month for an unlimited number of viewers. Okay. And we're like, you know, we got to roll our own here. We got to get our own server, you know, figure out, you know, what we can do
take out
the middleman. Yeah. And so we had a friend of ours that actually worked at a server farm, in Lansing, Michigan called Liquid Web. And we said, you know, can we get just a little tiny bit of bandwidth on, you know, some gigantic server that you have there in the rack? And he said, sure, I can. And because I'm an employee, I get it at cost. You know, it cost me like, I don't even know what it was, like 20 cents an hour or something. I mean, it was very, very, very cheap and we could run it all the time. And so that's how we moved from paying somebody else to running our own streaming service.
Okay.
But what we built was so much more than what we needed that we went, oh gosh, we could invite other storm chasers onto our server and get them to stream what they're seeing. Now we have five times the number of camera views out in the field.
Right.
And so,
and a bigger scope.
Yeah. That was it. Well, we couldn't be everywhere all the time. Sure. So we started adding associate chasers. So we, you know, we added a guy in Minnesota, and we added a guy in Colorado, and we added one of those storm chaser tour guys that, you know, would put it in his van and go out and drive around because he's out driving around anyway.
Right.
And each one of those people would get paid through us for the use of their video if a TV station purchased it.
Almost, and obviously, like iTunes for weather radio.
It was like iTunes for weather, or like Fiverr for a forecast, you know, and so obviously the you know, Weather Channel, CNN, Fox News, those types of places started noticing as well, especially when we would do hurricane chasing. Mm-hmm. So we've got all these cameras, they're live, they're on the coast, they're waiting for, you know, a Cat 3 to come ripping in. And so that's when the national networks really started taking notice of what we were doing. And at first, it was a completely manual process. Like if somebody started streaming live, I would have to go into the server and turn on their feed so that it would pop up on the website and say live now.
Sure.
You know, it's all automated today with scripting and, you know, all this back end stuff. But for about a year, literally somebody would have to call and say, hey, I'm about to start streaming down here in Arkansas. And when I would see them pop up on the screen, then I'd have to go in and turn it on for the home viewer.
Right.
And that was a crazy year. That was 15 years ago now. About the time, I think, in fact, I want to say it was the day we figured out how to do that automatically, where I would push the button in my car and about a minute later it would pop up on the website automatically, was the day I drove into a tornado east of Omaha.
Well, firsthand experience, can't beat that.
Streaming live to our Channel 6 partner in Omaha, who's still a client today, and it was the day of the Little Sioux, Iowa tornado. And that tornado, I believe, was a 3 or 4. And it came across the river and went into the bluffs, the Los Hills. And it hit a Boy Scout camp.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After it went over the Boy Scout camp, it went over the hill and it hit us. Myself and my chase partner and business partner, Kenny Allen. And so, obviously, when you have a tragedy of that magnitude and you have film of it, it's just like that tornado would have happened whether we were there or not.
Right.
Everybody says, oh, I can't believe you make money off of tragedy. Well, that's the biz, you know, at times.
Right.
And we give back, you know, we did a big fundraiser for the scout camp and all sorts of stuff afterwards. Right. But when you have that exclusive video of an event, you know, like look at some of the video coming out of Ukraine, you know, when you see the chopper go down because it's blown out of the sky, that person got a payday, you know, for shooting that video because he was the only one there. We got a payday because our video of that tornado that, again, had gone through the Boy Scout camp with the tragic consequences rolled on every network in the country at 7 a.m. the next morning. Every network. We were in our local TV station control room, and they got all those monitors in there.
Yeah.
And across the top, they had ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, every network. And at 7 o'clock a.m. Central Time on the dot, it was our video and us screaming about being in the tornado. Rolled on every single network. Okay? Every single network paid over $1,000 for the use of that video. So we instantly started our company, Severe Studios, with the intention that we would make it better. We would always have free access for the National Weather Service and for any government agency that needed it, that we would go out and do spotter training, and that we would serve the public, just like local radio stations, just like we had done in radio for years and years and years.
Sure.
But that we would use Severe Studios to also inform the public of what severe weather can do and to be prepared for it and to have a weather radio and all of those things that you need to have to stay safe during severe weather.
Right.
But, you know, had we not had that experience, I wouldn't be sitting here today with you because, you know, after a while, you know, the Weather Channel hired me directly. They paid a pretty decent salary. So I was able to get a few bucks together to buy the radio station here.
Right.
Had we not gotten hit by a tornado and gotten video of a tragic situation at that Boy Scout camp, I wouldn't be sitting here today doing what we're doing right now.
Well, and let's face it, news is news
is
because
news.
People want to know the news, and it's, you know, people talk about, oh, so you should do that for free. Well, nothing is free, and you have your time, and you had a personal tragedy, and you know,
have equipment, have gas, you have maintenance. Yeah. You know, it blew out three windows in my car. It took my license plate, rolled it up like a newspaper.
Sure.
You know, certainly, absolutely nothing what the poor families, you know, had to go through.
Right.
But that's the other, that's the flip side of the coin. You know, storm chasers do not root for death and destruction.
Right.
You know,
they're there to log it.
We're there to capture what is going to happen, whether we are there or not.
Right.
And, you know, there's chasers that get caught up in the excitement of, I saw a tornado, and they don't know what's happening on the ground. You know, there's a great video from that 1998 Spencer, South Dakota tornado. Shot, it was one of the first tornadoes ever to shot on 35 millimeter film, you know, up close, personal, widescreen, whatever. And, you know, that person had driven from Texas to Spencer, South Dakota. You know, it was forecast. He was actually listening to me on the radio giving reports as to where the tornado was.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of directed him to it, and he got this beautiful film shot, sun setting behind this black churning mass, you know, that was 2 miles away. Well, 2 miles away, you don't know what's happening on the ground,
right?
And what was happening while he was filming that was eight people were dying. You know, these were elderly people at a rest home that were getting blown out of their beds. And but you don't know that that's happening.
Right.
So he's cheering that he's shooting this amazing footage. And then, of course, then you get hit with the flip side that, hey, people died in this.
Right.
People lost their businesses, their homes,
their livelihood,
their neighbors, their bank.
Right.
You know, the bank,
their
all that was left. Yeah, all that was left of the bank in Spencer was the vault.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything else was wiped clean.
Right.
And so, you know, there was like two businesses, two buildings left standing in Spencer, and they moved the city hall, the post office, and the bank all to that guy's house.
Right.
Because it was the only thing still standing in town, like one grain silo and that guy's house on the corner of town.
Like Barneveld. Gosh, yeah, similar.
Very, very, very similar situation. You know, I thought we were going to have a situation like that a few weeks ago down in Iowa. You know, we had a big tornado, came very close to Des Moines. I thought we were going to have a really bad day. We had a bad enough day in Winterset, Iowa, that we had some people killed there from on a day that we didn't really expect big tornadoes.
Right.
And so, you know, it was kind of a surprise to get a 70-mile-long EF4 in early season. And we lost life there. But if that track would have been 40 miles further north, 30 miles further north, it would have went right through the heart of Des Moines. So think about what an F4 through the biggest city in Iowa, what kind of tragedy that would have been.
Right.
But again, we were there. We were streaming live video, working with our media partners. We're tweeting, we're Facebooking, we're streaming live. You know, we're YouTubing, we're doing all of the stuff that we can do to get the information to the public through both new media and legacy media.
I would hope, too, those situations inform people in a way that it becomes much more real, that tornadoes, you don't want to mess around with. This is what happens. You know, so when I hear there's a tornado warning, I mean, I'm a little bit more of a, you know, tornado warning.
Or you go outside.
You've had so many of them that it's, you know, a warning is shmorning. Who cares? You know, but the fact when you can see that's really, you know, up close and personal on the ground experience you're talking about.
And the warnings have actually gotten so good over the last decade that we now have over 20 minutes average lead time between the time that your weather radio or your phone beeps and buzzes at you until the tornado actually hits your house. It used to be 3 minutes. So we've gone from 3 minutes average to a 20 minute average. That's enough time to eat a sandwich and brush your teeth and then go
change your clothes.
I've got my tornado boots ready to go, you know, put the helmet on and go.
We joke
and,
about something that's very serious.
Well, but you think about that, you have 17 more minutes than you did in 1980.
Right.
In 2022.
Right. So take it seriously. Make that time count.
Use that time to, you know, get your stuff together and get to shelter. And, You know, so yeah, it is, you know, we make fun of it, but it's
I think that's part of how we deal with the seriousness of it.
Yeah.
It's not meant to really make it a joke, but
social science is one thing, because the warnings have gotten so good, people are starting to actually become more complacent. Right. Just like you said. Right. Oh, we get warnings all the time. Well, a tornado warning is a little different than a severe thunderstorm warning or you know, winter storm warning. You know, weather advisory, every time there's right. an inch of snow, we get an advisory. Okay, well, that's, you get warning fatigue, right? So what you just said was exactly right, because the social scientists that we've been working with over the last decade or so have determined that it takes 4 to 5 confirmations that something is happening before you will actually take action on that thing.
Right.
So your phone goes off. That's your first. And you're like, what is that? Then maybe you have a weather radio, NOAA weather radio. Maybe that goes off and you're like, oh, I should really pay attention to what's going on here. Then you see it on social media and you're like, oh, that's number three. Then your mom calls you from the west side of town and you're on the east side of town. She says, hey, I think something's happening over here. And then you tune into Sphere Studios and you see a live tornado.
Right.
Coming into your town.
Right.
That's
right.
your, that finally, finally, we're stubborn humans, right?
Well, it's like a marketing adage. Sure, you don't have to get something in front of somebody 11 times or some silly
right.
thing for them to even yep. notice that, oh, there's an event going on.
You know? Yep. But to believe it,
yeah.
that is even more the problem, especially nowadays with a lot of misinformation and and everything being political and everything else. Weather's not political. Weather
weather doesn't care.
That tornado doesn't care. Left, right, center, whatever.
Right. Weather's microbes, they just don't give a darn.
And you can argue about climate change and make that into a political thing, but here's the deal. That tornado is coming toward your house. You need to do something. Right. You can't be apathetic toward it.
Right.
So it's our job to give you that information, and that's
do what you will with
that's
it,
what we but, do
right
yep
folks. My guest today is Corey Hartman, the owner and founder of Sphere Studios, as well as WRPQ. We're gonna take a brief break and come back here on Frame of Reference, but don't go anywhere, because we're going to talk about a lot of things, I hope, this afternoon, and probably get into two episodes, because the way we're going, this is almost an episode right here.
No, you get me on part. Weather, and it's all over.
Oh, so. The passion comes out like crazy. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on Frame of Reference on WRPQ 99.7 Max FM's digital network.
Are you dealing with a moody meow? Or a whiny woofer? Or a negative neighbor in your family? Well, fear not. McFarland's in Sauk City has just the right pet toys and pet foods to put spring in any step and a whoopee in any woofer and a me-wow in any cat. Stop by and bring your fur baby with you. We're pet-friendly in every way at McFarland's, one block south of Highway 12, 780 Carolina Street in Sauk City.
We're back here on Frame of Reference, and my guest today is actually a guy that made Frame of Reference possible, or at least was the impetus for getting it going. So, in a way, we're talking with the guy that said to Raleigh, you know what, I was doing mornings at McFarland's 5 years ago,
right.
and COVID hit, and there was all this craziness with COVID, and I started having these longer conversations, and Corey was nice enough to let my longer conversations go longer than the 22 minutes I was supposed to be doing, for a little while. And then it got to the point where, okay, you got to get back to 22 minutes. And they were cutting things out and whatnot. And I said, why don't you do a podcast instead? And here we are doing Frame of Reference for coming up on 2 years now.
That's crazy,
isn't it? And, you know, building the listenership. And I hope this show will help do that as well, because it's fun talking with Corey. Thank you for being on.
Thank you for doing the show.
I'm sorry it took so long, too, because we talked about this back when Mornings on McFarland's was going
I've pushed you off for like 3 years. And Raul said, I will not be ignored anymore.
And I said, I will make you smell my armpit if you do not do this. So anyways, we started off and we just launched into Corey's background on weather. And I don't know if you noticed that if you listened to the first part of this podcast, but Corey's a little passionate about weather. So he has got a lot of cool stories to tell. And anyone that's thinking about maybe doing a storm chaser, he's a great resource for that sort of thing.
Yeah, or even storm spotting. I mean, the National Weather Service does classes so that you can be part of that. You know, you're not chasing them down,
right.
but you're you're stationed at a specific spot near your house or a part of the county that needs coverage, and you go there and you see what's going on. Sure. You report the hail and the spinny clouds and whatever else. Sure. And so, you know, so spotters are very important too. That ground truth, right?
Right.
Everybody's like, well, we have apps and radars and this and that. Well, that's all great, except the radar beam is, you know, 6,000 feet above the ground,
right.
It's not going to see that little tornado spinning down right. in that cornfield. So so spotters are very important as well.
Well, and I'm amazed at how often that radar is very deceptive about, you know, the storm track or what's really going on.
Sure, it's a machine. It doesn't know.
Yeah, and I mean, the information is pumping out there, you just don't know what kind of the quality of the equipment or the quality of the interpretive software, all that good stuff.
Yep.
And we blew right past the first part of the show because that's our nature.
So we have to backtrack now.
Yeah, we're going to backtrack. No, right. Yeah, and then normally we start this show out with our favorite things, and I don't. Maybe this is not people's favorite thing on the show, so maybe it was a good thing. I, you know, just like the tornado, right? And it just blew through and told you, "Hey, I'm not doing this anymore."
Right.
But I want to go back to it. I'm committed to favorite things. It's something that I'm doing this for me. Okay.
All
I
really,
because I enjoy what happens. This is very Rorschachian. You know, we're on the radio.
I didn't prep at all.
No,
so,
and we're, you know, we just don't, you know, please know vile language that, you know, sometimes comes out of our mouths just when we're not on the air. Anyways, okay, so start out with the easy one. Favorite color?
Blue.
Why blue?
Sky.
Okay. Okay.
Right?
Any other variation, other times where you're not feeling blue, you're feeling no?
No, blue is
you're
it.
Blue. You're the
guy. I'm the blue guy.
Okay. Is your logo for Storm Studios, is that blue?
No, it's red, like alert,
okay.
Warning.
Ah, mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. How about a favorite bird?
Favorite bird?
Mm-hmm.
I really like eagles.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I can't not like
patriotic
eagles in this area,
and whatever.
Right,
but
right.
In this area, they're a little they're fleeting to me. Like my family keeps saying, "Oh, we see eagles all the time," and I keep missing them. You know, I went to the eagle release in Sauk. That was great. It was like 14 below zero that day. It was fantastic. Why can't we release eagles in the summer? Do they not fly in the summer?
No, they don't.
Is there something that
they
I should
no
know?
Fly zone for eagles in the summer.
I should have known what that was. But anyway,
busy basking.
Okay, so, okay, fine. So I get it. I'm sure it's something with the mating season and whatever. But you know, 14 below in January. That's when we released the eagles.
Yep.
So so we checked that out. That was, you know, fantastic day.
And I hate to tell you, but the Eagles don't really give a darn about when you want to see them. I'm just putting that
I
out there.
I get that. I'm just asking the why.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it has to
You're
be.
You're like the kid in class. This is, why are we studying this stupid material?
Right. I'm never going to use this 14 below Eagle release. Anyway.
Okay. How about a favorite quote? Do you have a favorite quote?
Favorite quote.
Or do you have a kind of a maxim that you use to go through life?
I really don't. I mean, I have one for radio, and that's tighten up.
Tighten up.
That means no dead air, no, you know, no
right.
sloppiness, good
right.
presentation,
right.
that sort of thing. So
right.
I've always been make it tighter.
Okay.
Which means no gaps between
sure.
elements.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Like,
keep it going.
Keep it going. It should.
Right.
You know, radio should be like a rushing river, and when you tune in, you jump in and get carried along with whatever's happening. And
okay.
so that's what I think a radio station should sound like. It should be exciting, and you become part of something.
Well, I mean, media in fact is kind of that way now. If you can't grab them in the first 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, make it, I don't know what's going on here. So.
Why it's called a stream, right?
Hopefully a stream with rapids, right?
Right.
So you really get them engaged.
Right.
So how about a favorite place to go when you need to de-stress or recalibrate yourself?
So there's a couple. So I love going back to the UP and going to any number of lakes and rivers. And we have a little camp, little hunting camp, you know, grab a pass. and go to camp. So that's a family thing. But I love being out on the open plains in the middle of a field where you can see the horizon in every direction, and you're just there with nature. You know, storms can be a very chaotic, a very scary, a very dangerous thing, but and some people don't believe me when I say this, but they can also be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You can have this spiraling 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 foot tall supercell thunderstorm that does not produce a tornado, which we still don't know why. But because the one the next day that looks exactly the same produces 18. A mile wide wedge or 18 tornadoes. Right. But it's the only storm there, and you're in the middle of Kansas somewhere, and the sun is going down, and you can see the stars above this anvil with lightning in it, mm-hmm. and you're the only person on the side of this gravel road watching this. It doesn't get any better mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. So when I need to escape, I escape to
wide open spaces,
not barren spaces like Montana, but wide open spaces with weather. Sure. You know, going on.
There's a lot of metaphorical stuff going on with
there's
that
a little
idea.
Bit, yeah. little bit going on yeah. there.
You know, yeah. the watching the storm from afar, and
it's so weird. The two places that I grew up, you know, in the UP, to get out of the trees, you have to go into town, right?
Mm-hmm.
To find trees in Kansas, you have to go into town. So it's like a complete
Sigmund Freud would acknowledge this, and he would ask you questions. Oh, yeah,
where
go.
Do you want to be?
Well, you want to be in the forest, or you want to be in the mind? Make up your mind.
Do you want to be in the forest, or do you want to be in the trees? Yeah. So I'm sure there's something there, surrounded by never being able to see the horizon while I was growing up,
right,
and then moving to the plains for a while, where you can, you know, the sun goes down in the UP at like 6:30 in the summer because you've got 80-foot tall pine trees, you know, in South Dakota in the summer, the sun sets at 10:05 PM, know, and it's light until 10:30.
Right.
And you saw it go below the horizon.
And it's up at 4.
And it's up at 4. Yeah. So days are much longer, which is great for storm chasing mm-hmm. because, you know, tornado time is 6 p.m. usually.
Hours for those tornadoes to hide.
Yes. Uh-huh. And nighttime tornadoes,
those are scary.
That's a scary thing because you can't see them coming.
Right.
You can maybe, I've only done a couple of nighttime tornado chases. One in northwest Iowa. I can't remember exactly where it was, Spirit Lake or Spencer or somewhere in northwest Iowa. And thankfully, it was a low precipitation nighttime storm because when the lightning would light up, you could see the funnel.
Okay.
And you could see that it was a damaging tornado. There was debris and stuff getting churned around.
Okay.
But you only get that split second to see it, and you pray for more lightning.
Right.
Because you're like, I got to see where that is so I stay safe, so I can warn these towns that are coming up.
Right.
So nighttime tornadoes, those are very, very scary.
Yay. So how about our favorite dog? You like dogs?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like dogs.
Favorite dog?
I like beagles.
Beagles?
I like beagles.
Oh, my daughter and you and I should get together and exchange beagle stories sometimes.
Yes.
And beagles are a strange dog breed, I think, because until you've had a beagle, I don't think you really understand how charming a beagle really is.
How charming it is and how curious that nose is.
Oh, my God. And people will say a beagle is nothing but four legs with a nose.
That's
or a
it.
Nose with four legs, right?
Either way.
You know, and we've noticed with our new dogs that we have now for a couple of years, we had three beagles before that, and you could not have a gate open ever because they'd be in the next county, you know, in a couple of minutes.
Following their nose.
It's just like, there is something going on in Columbia County that I need to sniff up close.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah. And they do have a lot of character.
Maybe because they're you know, short to the ground and you know, curious.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason why they're hunting hounds, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's that those hounds, and then there's the
so we have
chasers.
We have a beagle terrier mix right now. That's what our dog
that'll
is,
get you going. And that bait. We could do beagle impersonations. This is one with long ears. Whatever. How about, do you have a favorite book?
Oh, goodness. I'm a radio geek, so everything that I have is educational, real.
Ooh,
I know.
Right on to our next question.
The history of American Top 40.
Oh, really?
Casey Kasem and Shadow Stevens.
Actually,
and
that sounds really interesting.
That whole, how that came to be.
Okay.
That I think that's one of my favorite books that I've ever read because I'm just a big radio geek.
Any anything about that that inspired you? Or
oh, sure. There were tons of ideas in there. You know, everything from how they felt a format clock should look, you know, where your commercial break should land, and and just to how you should deal with people, how you should take care of the people that work under you.
Right.
Casey Kasem was great at that. He had a great team around him. You know, Don Bastani and Tom Rounds and all the guys out in LA that were his inner core. And everybody that worked under him just had, you know, nothing but the best things to say about that.
Well, he's such
that
a gold
gentleman.
Standard for that genre.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. Just, if you want somebody to look up to, you look up at the Dick Clarks and the even Ryan Seacrest nowadays. I mean, he's been doing it for so long.
Right.
And the Casey Kasems of the world as to, you know, how to do radio, but just how to be a good person too.
When you I think it's inspiring in general to just see good people get that kind of success.
Yeah.
You know, because there's so many jerks that have success thrown upon
things,
them
yeah.
for whatever reasons. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you just think, why? You know, I've met a lot of in my work at the Union Theater.
Sure.
Met people that were Gregory Pecks, wonderful people that had every reason to be complete jerks and were still princes and everything they did, the way they treated everyone. And then there were people that were, you know, one-shot Marys or Billys in the music industry, and they thought they were just the cat's meowing.
That's because they're jaded.
Well,
they didn't get that next role. They didn't get that next thing.
Yeah,
you know,
nobody wants to work with them. You know, it's just
what the heck? And sadly, the media business is like that, and the storm chasing business is like that. And I would assume that there's a lot of businesses where you have an exciting. I mean, I don't know, like backhoe driver. I don't know of how much competition there is in that. But when you're competing to get video,
and 14 people apply for our backhoe job.
Yeah,
we're known as the backhoe people.
We're the backhoe kings. Yes, but when you're trying to sell tornado video to a national TV network or even internationally, I mean, that's got a little bit of you know, competition and stress and everything else there.
Right.
And so there's a lot of people vying for that 1 2-minute slot on Good Morning America.
Right.
And and so that will bring out, you know, the worst in people.
Yeah.
You know, internet message boards and social media, yeah,
trolling in general,
and trolling and all of that stuff is, like I said, I'm sure it's there in every profession. But media and storm chasing, the two things I took towards,
it's right out there front and center.
It's
in there.
It's over the top.
Yeah.
In fact, we even had, I'm getting off your list again.
What list? This was just here for fun. Here we go. Yeah. The list shape. Yeah.
There.
Thank you for that sound effect.
That's done.
BBC sound effects.
Foley guy.
Have nothing on us.
So,
yeah.
So I was actually pitched a television show. We shot a pilot and everything.
Wow.
And it was literally going to be about the Alaskan road truckers, truckers. And you know, they show, like, you know, that person got the payday and this person got a little less and this person went in the ditch or went through the water and they lost a, you know, $80,000 truck. So they blew it that day. They were going to do that with me and a couple other storm chasing video brokers.
Okay.
You know, which team got the sale and got their video to the Weather Channel and all that kind of thing. And it was all just going to be about the drama and the behind the scenes, because there's literally enough of it to fill a 13 episode season
easily.
Yeah.
And people go, that can't possibly be true.
Yeah. Well, it is. You know, it's so funny. Everybody asked me about the movie Twister, right? Uh-huh. How real was Twister? Uh-huh. Well, when I first saw it, you know, I think I graduated from high school the year it came out. I said, well, there's no way any of that is true. You know, these people are nuts. There's no way that you'd have a tornado outbreak this big. There's no way any of that, you know, is true.
Wrong.
There are crazy people. There have been.
Oh, that's just evident all around us these days.
Yes,
come on.
But there are. You know, you got to be a little nuts to chase a tornado,
yeah,
right? But there,
that is true.
But we've got some.
My wife would not be.
But
doing
we've
that
got
job
some
ever,
crazy, so. Crazy people in the storm chasing community. So this series was going to be all about all of that drama and but back to Twister, you know. Then for about a few years I'm like, "Oh my God, this is like a documentary." You know, I'm like, this is exactly what goes on. And the love story, the all of it.
Yes.
And now I've gone back to it's more of a comedy,
yeah.
than anything.
Yeah, it's the world you wished it was.
Right.
So,
right. I wish the tornadoes waited for you
right.
to get the perfect yeah. angle and
that the romance turned out as well.
And that everybody was happy at right. the end. Yeah.
Until the next one.
And so, yeah.
Okay, last question.
Okay, yep.
And the favorite things, and then
right.
we're going to break this episode
perfect.
And come on back.
All right.
So, do you have a favorite memory from childhood? Something that if you are reminded of it or just you're in a place, you smell a smell that you go back to and just, it's one of those kind of nice places that you can go to in your memories and kind of change your mood. You know, I mean, I have things of those that I try to catalog and remember them when I need that kind of lift, that endorphin blast that you sometimes need. Is there something like that?
Boy, I'm sure there's 100 things that I could think of.
Take first one off.
But you know, it really I started in broadcasting so young. I mean, I started 15 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going on 30 years of broadcasting
sure.
here. And
sure.
So you said smell, and there's nothing like the smell of that coffee pot at the radio station at 5 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and you're waiting for that coffee to come out of there so that you can, you know, hit the sign-on cart and start broadcasting
uh-huh.
for the day
uh-huh.
At 5 o'clock in the morning playing 40s and 50s music, because
yeah,
that's what I started. I've been doing oldies radio since
the
you know, day I was born. So so that smell and that station, very, you know, special
sure.
to me. You know, they
sure.
took a chance on a 15-year-old
right.
to, you
right.
know, I think that's, you know, that's the age of my youngest kid.
Mm-hmm.
Would I put Dexter in charge of a whole radio station for 12 hours on a Saturday morning? I probably would not do that yet.
Maybe,
you know, maybe a year or two down the road
sure.
or with Max, who's 18 now.
Right.
Sure.
Well,
but
if they demonstrate the kind of commitment that you had as well. I
sure.
mean, that how many kids do you know that go home and read the teletype? Not that there are teletypes, but, you know, print off stuff off the internet.
Not
just,
much anymore.
Yeah,
no.
Know. And now we're going right back to the gum shop.
You know, so. And the news from 6 weeks ago.
Newsflash. So.
But those early Saturday mornings or Christmas morning,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're
mm-hmm.
part-time, you're in high school, you
mm-hmm.
work the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would split Christmas. I think we were on the air for 18 hours or something, and we would split it right down the middle. I would do 9 hours, and my buddy Kevin would do 9 hours. And by that ninth hour and your fifth time of playing Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, you start to get just a little
bit. Oh, my God,
bit,
I don't want to think of that.
You start to
Grandma
get.
Grandma Got Run Over by
yeah.
Oh, Lord, now I'm going to be singing that.
You start to get a little punchy.
Yeah, just a tad.
And then you start doing pranks
mm-hmm.
to the next guy that's coming in mm-hmm. to take over
wow.
from you.
Sanity.
And we had this Burl Ives record, and he had just this weird look on his face
mm-hmm.
when he did this record album. He was kind of like, oh, like that. And and it was just the weirdest looking record album, Christmas album. And I put it on the end of a big, you know, microphone boom arm, and I clipped it on there, but it was below the window. And as soon as Kevin started reading, we had to do all these live read commercials. Langenberg Funeral Home would like to give you the feeling of the season. And I never understood a funeral home doing Christmas ads, but
hey, you know,
it pays the bills,
it does,
right?
It does.
So, you know, from Billy, Petey, Stinky, and Joe, we'd like to wish you all of the best of the upcoming season.
You really don't want a guy named Stinky doing your embalming.
That's why he's Stinky. Anyway, and so he would, and we had this big binder, and it was just full. Everything on Christmas Day was a live commercial.
Sure.
And so we'd put this, you know, scratchy old piano record in the background, so we had some background music. And he rips into this commercial, and slowly Burl Ives and his goofy face raises up over the control board, and my buddy lost it. He lost it. He couldn't even run the board. He couldn't get to the microphone to turn it off. He was on the floor convulsing. And that is one of my favorite memories for being 16-year-old and messing with this 33-year-old guy.
That's
taking over on Christmas Day. That was the best Christmas present ever.
Priceless. That's one of those Kodak commercials. Mm-hmm. It's just priceless. Folks, my guest today is none other than Corey Hartman. So, which isn't your real name. But I'm not going to even go there right now. No, Corey Hartman, who is the owner and general manager and just
program director and sales director.
Grand poobah of WRPQ 99.7 Max FM, as well as the Storm Network, your Storm.
Severe Studios.
Mm-hmm. I can't get that one through my head. I'm going to have to paste that.
Everybody
on
calls it Severe Storm Studios. If you type that in, you get all sorts of weird things. Severe Studios.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, right? Yep. We're going to take a break and come back with the closer for this episode and come back next week. So you have to tune in and hear the two of us laugh like crazy people and hopefully talk about some meaningful things too at the same time. So don't go anywhere here on Frame of Reference and 99.7 Max FM's digital network.
There's never been a better time to support small businesses and save big with Max FM Big Deals. Discount certificates from the Max FM Big Deals store will save you up to 50% off retail every day of the week. Local restaurants and wineries, healthy living and spa services, gifts for the holidays, and a whole lot more. New deals are added weekly. Check it out now at MaxFMBigDeals.com. That's MaxFMBigDeals.com. Start shopping and start saving.
You know, change can be a scary thing. When ownership of WRPQ changed 5 years ago, I have to confess that I was a bit scared, or at least nervous, about whether or not my live show at that time would be affected. Well, needless to say, I had nothing to worry about. Like most changes, it ultimately ended up being a very good thing, because Corey came in with lots of great ideas, guidance, and experience that I believe just made my show and my work on it better. The other thing that was evident about Corey from the get-go was his passion for radio and passion for doing it well in a small market that would allow him to really focus on serving that community. It was a perfect fit in many, many ways. And that passion has been developing since he was a teenager. But the driving force of it has remained the same, to entertain and to serve the needs of his community. And now with the advent of worldwide streaming, that community is in fact global. And at the same time, our very own local treasure. And then with his other business, Severe Studio, we also benefit from a frame of reference that allows us to see that severe weather is not just an interesting phenomenon, but more importantly, a life-changing event for the people affected by its power. Join us next week as we explore both of these passions more and celebrate Corey's professional attitudes towards Sauk County and beyond. Till then, stay well.